It's the business.
The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill on WLR.
Thanks to MK Brazel, Chartered Accountants and Tax Advisors.
Good evening, you're very welcome along to tonight's Hot Desk. And first off, thanks very much to Aveen Fallon for filling in for me brilliantly, as always, last week. Lots coming up between now and 7 o'clock. We will hear why it's very important for companies to file their returns. Also, I'll speak to a Waterford woman who has set up a new catering company all about the charcuterie boards. Looking forward to chatting about that too. Earlier this month, there was an official launch at SETU of an external advisory board for the Department of Culinary Arts, Hospitality and Tourism. What does all this mean? Well, I'm delighted to be joined now by Dr. Don O'Neill, who is the head of Department of Culinary Arts, Hospitality and Tourism at SETU, to tell me more. Good evening. How are you, Don?
Good evening, Mary. Thank you for inviting me along this evening. Great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks very much for coming in. SETU is undergoing so much transformation at the moment. Obviously, you know, the university status is up and running now a few years, and we're really starting to see exciting changes at this point. We'll kind of focus first on your department, though. What generally happens at the Department of Culinary Arts, Hospitality and Tourism?
Yeah, it's an exciting time in SETU for sure, and we have some really great developments happening at the moment. And this advisory board we just launched this month is a classic example of that, and it's where we're reaching out to industry in the region and beyond in the areas of culinary arts, hospitality and tourism to help us to create more up-to-date, more relevant programmes and also connecting with industry for work placement for our students and opportunities for our staff also to engage in professional development. So it's a very exciting time and lots happening in this area.
Am I right in saying there's quite a big demand in terms of industry for you know, a talent pipeline to come out of universities to fill jobs in these fields?
For sure. There's huge opportunities in this area at the moment. And I'd say at this point, you know, for anybody who's out there, any of your listeners who are thinking about careers in hospitality, tourism, culinary, there are lots of opportunities out there. It's an industry that's growing and will continue to grow into the future. Lots of opportunity in Waterford, in the southeast generally, and beyond. So it's an exciting time.
So what will the advisory board comprise or look like then, and what are the plans for it?
Yeah, the advisory board is a brainchild of one of my colleagues, Jacinta Green-Beatty, who is a lecturer in hospitality management at SETU for over 30 years, vastly experienced in the area, and she looks after work placement for our students on our degree programmes. So it's very connected into industry anyway. Mm-hmm. So she really, I suppose, wanted to take that a step further and to formalise a board whereby we'd meet once a semester with experts from the industry right around the country, not just in Waterford or the southeast, but nationally, to help us to develop and devise better programmes, keep us in touch with what's happening really on the ground, I suppose, really. And the programme board, this board will meet once a semester, as I say, to give us a chance to really, you know, dig deep into what's going on and to stay abreast of current developments in the sector.
Because I suppose any course needs to be kind of designed with industry in mind, doesn't it? Especially at university level.
For sure, absolutely. And all our programmes have a placement component. Students spend at least a semester in work placement. So it's very important from the start that students are aware and that we also are aware of what the industry needs. You know, it's it helps the graduates when they go into the real workplace later to hit the ground running and to be really, you know, ready for work. So we pride ourselves in that at SETU, that our graduates are work ready.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I suppose it's almost like sometimes you hear government departments with loads of different kind of parts to it. And this is kind of like that as well, because you've got culinary arts, then you've got hospitality and you've got tourism. Yeah. So do students specialise then in all those different areas?
Absolutely. We have three key areas, as you say. We have four programmes currently in the department. We have two programmes in culinary arts where students can choose from a level 6 higher certificate or a level 8 Bachelor of Honours degree in culinary arts. And those programmes give students really great insight into the practical nature of culinary arts, particularly at level 6. But the level 8 programme has a unique feature in that students spend a year abroad as a compulsory part of the programme, which is really quite unique. So it's a compulsory year of study for one semester and work for one semester abroad, which is unique to the whole SETU campus. It's the only course that offers that compulsory year abroad.
So when they go abroad, then are they working kind of in a restaurant setting or?
Yeah, culinary arts program, absolutely. It's in food settings typically restaurants. Or it could be in hotel. It could be in food development. But they work. It has to be abroad, and then they also study abroad at one of our partner universities, again in areas related to food. So we've got exciting partners all over Europe, in the States and Canada, where students look at food studies for a semester. So they come back to us to their final year in year four with really top skills. And when these students graduate, they really are the creme de la creme of you know, the culinary area.
No pun intended, Don.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, for sure.
And I suppose it's fair to say as well that tourism, hospitality, the culinary space isn't without its challenges at the moment as well. Just in terms of, I suppose, finding talent, like I mentioned earlier. Yep. But then I suppose keeping doors open, you know, there's a lot of overhead, there's a lot of heavy costs involved. So I'd imagine that there'd have to be a bit of business and economics behind what they learn as well.
For sure, absolutely. That's a key part of all our all our programs. Students look at financial planning, finance studies. They look at economic studies. There's legal components to the programs as well. So there is a training in the business side of the operations for sure. That's really important, as well as the practical skills they do. For example, on the Bachelor of Honours degree, they will also look at things like human resources. And they also go into areas like media, interestingly enough. They choose, you know, modules. So it gives them a really a good breadth of understanding of what the industry is all about, because it goes beyond the kitchen, you know, for sure. You know, it reaches into all kinds of areas. So that training is critical. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's a common conversation I have on the hot desk about how, you know, when you're in the creative industry, whether that's creating food or you're a maker or a designer, that's one skill. But then bringing that skill to industry and running a business is a whole separate skill. And, you know, you kind of have to be an amazing multitasker when you go out into the world, don't you?
Absolutely, for sure. And that's why, you know, the work placement piece is critical for us, so students get that, you know, practical insight from the very, very start. Mm-hmm. Most of our students work anyway, part-time, but we, you know, reinforce those skills through, like you say, teaching them finance and so on as part of the program. So business acumen is critical for anybody today, I think, going into creative industries, that's for sure.
And the members of the external advisory board, then, I presume they've been cherry picked to kind of be able to help with all of these things.
Yeah, we're very fortunate here in Waterford to have wonderful connections. We've been offering our programs in tourism, hospitality, culinary for over 50 years on the Cork Road campus. So we've built up a huge network of connections, not just in the city or in the county, but way beyond, right out into the region and nationally. So we have indeed, we're very fortunate to have lots of our own graduates who come back to us to help us on the advisory board, but also national experts such as Sarah Dolly, who is the head of careers at Fáilte Ireland. Cyril McAree, who launched the initiative for us just last week, who is of course the editor of the Irish Hotel and Restaurant Times, and many of these key people in the industry nationally. So we're very fortunate to have these connections, and they help us at, you know, throughout the years with placement and advice and so on. But this formalises all that, and that we'll come together now once a semester to look at a body of work and to make sure that we are offering the very best of education for the people of the South East.
Yeah. And on all of that, fairly hot off the presser, I know it's only been very recently announced anyway, you're introducing a home economics course at SETU.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about that.
Very fortunately, in Waterford, on the Waterford campus, we're offering a three-year Bachelor Honours degree in Home Economics starting this September. We're very excited about this. This is a three-year programme which covers the three strands of home economics. That's culinary, textile design and family and society. And we'll be offering that on the Waterford campus, where students will also have the option to study a second subject from our arts programme, which gives them really fantastic opportunities into the future in lots of areas related to home economics. So that could be in teaching or in other areas such as sustainability, in food product development, in design, in, you know, lots of sectors which relate to home economics. So it's a very broad area, and that is a new offering now for Waterford.
I think this will be massively welcomed, because I suppose I would have nieces and nephews at that CAO stage. Some of them are gone on to college, some of them are still kind of have it all ahead of them, but I know a couple of them over the years had expressed an interest in home economics, but at the time I think the only option was Sligo. Mm-hmm. Maybe there might be one in Cork as well, but it was kind of, you had to travel to do home economics, and there weren't a lot of third level institutions in the country offering it. So this is quite exciting to hear that it's going to be available in the Southeast.
Very exciting for us in SETU and for everybody in the Southeast. It's a super opportunity. We've got state-of-the-art facilities on the Cork Road campus, We're now building a textile room, which will be specifically for this programme. We've got state-of-the-art kitchens, which we students will avail of as well, and a very experienced staff. So I think we're really well placed to offer this this programme from September. It's very exciting for us all.
Yeah. What will the textile room comprise?
Yeah, it's sewing machines, embroidery machines, overlockers, all this type of very specific equipment, which is now we've ordered and is ready to go. So from September, that'll be a new addition to our rooms in SETU. So yeah, we're excited about this, absolutely. Yeah.
How much does getting the university status, which happened obviously in the last few years, how much does it help when, I suppose, you're vying for courses or expansion opportunities, funding? Like, you know, I'm guessing I'm not saying you look old, Don, so, you know, don't pick me up wrong, but you seem to be very embedded in SETU, so I'm guessing you're there a while.
Yeah.
So have you noticed?
Yeah. I've worked there for 36 years.
Oh, well, I wouldn't have thought you were that long there now.
That's very kind of you. But no, it's a fantastic place, and there's no doubt the university status has made a huge difference to SETU in terms of not just our programme offering, but how we're perceived nationally and internationally as university. It's a big, big help. And delighted that we have so many new programmes coming on stream from this September, including home economics. And there's a lot more to come into the future. So it has made a big difference. It is bringing more funding. We can see there's a new building, of course, started on campus just recently.
Yeah.
It's an exciting time. We're very, you know, excited about what's going to happen into the near future, not just in the long term, but in the near future. Lots of change.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting just to see the dots being joined with industry in that way, you know, kind of responding to a demand and then, of course, arriving to meet that demand, I suppose.
For sure, absolutely. That's a critical part of our strategic plan. And now we're bringing this into action through this advisory board that we have in the department, that's for sure. And that's happening right across the university. We're very connected to industry. And I think the people of the Southeast, certainly to your listeners out there, if there's anybody looking at CAO applications at the moment, or if they have friends or family who are thinking about options, to have a close look at what SETU is offering, because we have some really, really exciting opportunities. And not to forget to check out the website, where you'll see all these opportunities, or to contact me if you wish. My name, you know, Don O'Neill is my name, and I'm very happy if you drop me an email. You'll find my details on the website.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Dr. Don O'Neill, Head of Department at the Department of Culinary Arts, Tourism and Hospitality at SETU, just launched an external advisory board with loads of other exciting things happening as well. Thank you very much.
The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill, WLR's business programme.
Thanks to MK Brazel, Chartered Accountants and Tax Advisors.
Well, when people get together nowadays, one of the really popular things to have is, I suppose, a charcuterie spread. I know I absolutely love it myself, and I'm quite hungry as I'm about to do this interview. But Maggie Kenny is a businesswoman based in Waterford, and she has set up a new venture, The Grazing Table, and it's aimed at corporate events, birthdays, christenings, communions, day after weddings, community events, hen parties, Christmas parties at home or in a workplace. You get the gist. She's here to tell me all about it, though. Good evening, Maggie. How are you?
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me.
No bother at all. Tell us a little bit first about yourself and your own business background before we talk about this new company.
Oh, OK. So I suppose the making of me getting involved in The Grazing Table came from the fact that I recently did my Level 9 in IADT in Dublin in cultural event management. And through that, I would have really discovered that a lot of people want to book finger food for events. And there wasn't really an offering down here in the Southeast for a kind of an elevated finger food. So same as everybody, I love chips, you know, the chicken wings, the goujons, whatever you get when you go to a party, usually provided in a pub scenario rather than a hotel.
Yeah.
So somebody had actually said to me before that I had put together some charcuteries at home for just friends and family coming to events. And someone suggested to me that it looked lovely. It was very aesthetically pleasing. And why did I not look at doing it as a business? Mm-hmm. So here I am, Mary.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And, you know, it is. I mentioned it in the intro. I'm a big fan of charcuterie myself, or sometimes, as we might refer to it, those kind of picky bits. I know that's a very unscientific way. Charcuterie is a much more polished way of describing it. But it's definitely a lovely thing. And I think people are leaning more towards that more casual way of grazing and eating rather than that big sit down heavy meal when they go to functions and events.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the lighter you can keep it, but to give a good variety as well. Mm. So like we have a whole range of, you know, your cheeses, from your French cheeses up to your like your Italian meats. Obviously, everything that kind of, you know, meshes them all together by way of condiments and sauces. So it's a little bit of everything. It's like you say, it's the picky stuff.
Yeah.
And picky comes into it very much so from my point of view, because I have a lot of allergies. So okay. I always have to be very careful if something is cooked and presented, you know, in a sharing plate. If I'm at an event myself, I have okay. to ask, you know, what's in that? What was it cooked with? Because I have seafood allergies. So, like, I wanted to be able to give something to people that they wouldn't have to kind of work behind the scenes to see, you know, what's in the food. That said, I also did my courses, obviously, in HACCP and allergens. And we do, you know, take extra care that everything that we have is labelled, that people know, you know, if there are walnuts going to be presented on their charcuterie boards, that they know where they are, that they haven't touched off anything else. So it's really important to be able to cater for people who do have allergies.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And then you mentioned something else as well, is that your kind of friends and family had commented before that you can make that presentation very aesthetically pleasing. And I think obviously that goes with all presentation of food and meals, but I think it's especially important when you're bringing out charcuterie, because it is about that sort of visual spread and the way you place the meat and making it all look really visual and the colour that appears as well. So is there an art to that, or is it something that you worked on, or how did you get so good at it?
So I suppose, again, friends, family would tell me that I am quite arty. You know, I've always kind of made gifts for people as well. So I suppose, yes, aesthetically pleasing, it looks good, but I always hang around at the events as well, even if they don't want me there. you know, just to explain, because people might say, hang on a second, why is there dark chocolate there? Yeah. And just to be able to say to them, you know, I would ask you to try a cheese with a piece of dark chocolate. It's amazing. Like the Comté cheese, it really works. You know, things like avocado on the French baguette with pistachio nuts just layered on top. They're kind of combinations that might look a bit odd, but they are very colourful and they are really tasty. Mm-hmm. So yes, I kind of describe it, I suppose, because I'm not from a food background, I do kind of describe it as food art. So for me, it was a case of making it look good. And people who are presenting finger food at a party, sometimes they just don't have the time to make it look so good.
Sure.
It's just more about the quantity rather than the quality of the presentation. Not so much the quality of the food is fine. But it's just to be able to give people something a little bit more elevated. And I think with that comes, you know, your descriptions. And, you know, yes, I can show people how to make them. I'm not going to do that because I put myself out of business.
Sure, yeah.
But I think it is just nice to be able to you know, eat with your eyes as well. Mm-hmm. And just to be able to see all the mix of everything. And we would purposely place them nearby each other. So, you know, everyone gets to taste a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. So a cheese might be next to, you know, a Serrano. It might be next to a condiment. And then obviously, you know, your nuts and your fruits. So it's nice just to be able to literally graze at the table.
Okay, so let's get to the good stuff here. Some of the options then, and you've kind of, I suppose, specced this out depending on the size of the event. So we don't have to go down through the whole list, but if you could kind of give us an overview there, like say, for example, if you're given a savoury option for between 20 and 50 people, what might that look like?
Yeah, so I suppose we would always include, you know, nuts, olives, the crackers or baguette or breadsticks. They can pick condiments if they want to do that extra as well. They would obviously have fresh or dried fruit. We try to mix them both in because mm-hmm. they're good colours with them. And then obviously they get to pick their cheeses. So, for example, I was at an event which I was very lucky to cater for last week out in SETU. No pressure, but for all the culinary team in the hospitality building.
I just had Don O'Neill in by coincidence earlier on the show.
Don, who was the lead contact for me there. But it was actually an event that was put on by the Alliance Francaise Waterford and Wexford. Excuse my pronunciation. and Sondrine Pack actually had me in there. They offer like a huge range of language courses.
Sure.
So they are really trying to push the French culture here in Ireland, and they're all over Ireland as well. But in attendance, might I say, was the attaché from the embassy and also the honorary consul. So it was lovely to have pictures of them with my product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just literally come straight from store to the venue and set up. So there's about a 3-hour setup time, depending on how many people and how big the event is. And then obviously there's a breakdown time afterwards for about an hour and a half to 2 hours. But it's just lovely to be able to present to people who are in the industry in particular. So that was a huge gig for me to get with like 65 people in my first week of trading as the grazing
table.
So I suppose, look, they can add as much as they want to into the grazing tables that they pick.
And sorry to interrupt you, but are they ordering this through your website then? Is that where they get all the selection?
We would suggest that they would contact us either by phone or by email.
Okay.
And we do have a website presence, so it is thegrazingtable.ie. Mm-hmm. And they'll also find me on Insta, so it is thegrazingtable.ie there as well. But I would suggest that anybody would come to me directly rather than to order online. We will obviously put up the details of what they can pick, but if somebody has allergens, we would allergies, we would obviously ask them to, you know, speak with us directly so we can cater.
Yeah.
Obviously, if people would prefer to do like a vegetarian option, we can stay away from the meats. So there's all sorts of options for everybody to kind of choose from. Mm-hmm. And with that would kind of, I suppose, work down the price of what they would be charged for the event. But we will be focusing on Waterford City and County. I don't want to kind of have to drive for hours and hours on end to, you know, to go up to Belfast to do an event when there's probably a company up there doing it just as good as me.
It's geographically kind of centred, I suppose.
Absolutely.
How small will you go? For example, if I had two friends over, like, are you catering for groups that small or is that just not worth your while? Like, are you more looking at events and kind of sizable parties?
Yeah, we are at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, in the future, I'd love to be able to say, Mary, I'll drop over, you know, a little hamper box for you just for your little gang who've arrived over to the house. But at the minute, we're kind of focusing between 20 and 100.
Okay.
And that would be in any corporate building that literally has a sink, a workshop and a fridge. It can be in the home. It could be in a pub that doesn't provide food.
Sure.
Any venue, literally. I just need to be able to set up and have a space to set up and to be able to refrigerate in between hand as well. So if I was told that I needed to be at an event at 6:30, I would arrive with all my platters for 3 o'clock, have it up and running for you guys at 6:30, and then probably be out of there at like 10 o'clock in the night. And everything cleared away and broken down at that stage.
Okay, so you're providing the whole shebang then.
Absolutely.
Kind of, you know, there's kind of no clearing up or anything. There's no onus on the person who's hired you to do this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the aim of it is that the grazing table is to make life easier for people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to free up their time and take away the stress. So, like, if people have 20 people coming to a New Year's Eve party in their house, absolutely we can cater for them. So it is just to try and make life easy, but to present things in a nice way on your kitchen counter, on your table in your dining area. We can bring tables if you need as well. But for like a party of 20 people, a 6-foot table is absolutely loads of space. Mm-hmm.
Okay, brilliant stuff. We're almost out of time. I suppose I want to wrap by saying, with the season that's in it, we are very much in the swing of Christmas party season now. Are you expecting to be busy between now, I suppose, and New Year's Day?
Yeah, absolutely. We have some bookings in already.
Great.
So obviously we're not working on Christmas Day or Stephen's Day, but Stephen's Night, we can actually put together something for you if you need. Mm-hmm. We would be looking at some of the smaller groups for that. But if anybody is interested, they can certainly contact me. So the telephone number to get me on would be 086-04-004-01, or you can email me on events with an S at thegrazingtable.ie.
Brilliant stuff, Maggie. It's a great venture and I think a huge market for it. And it's only something that's becoming more and more popular, that kind of charcuterie based way of eating and hosting events. So well done to you. Continued success and delighted to chat to you. So, you know,
Thank you, Mary.
I suppose so early in your journey, I really look forward to hearing more about how you're getting on. So Maggie Kenny of The Grazing Table, thank you very much.
The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill on WLR.
Thanks to MK Brazel, Chartered Accountants and Tax Advisors.
A company formation agent is warning enterprises across the country, including in Waterford, that they're facing a growing risk of involuntary strike-off before the end of the year if they haven't filed their annual returns. The warning comes from Company Bureau. It's the largest company formation agent in Ireland and already helping more than 50 businesses a week get set up. To talk to me more about all of this, I'm delighted to be joined now by Managing Director of Company Bureau, Andrew Lamb. Andrew, good evening. How are you?
Good evening, Mary. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show. Much appreciated.
No bother at all. Before we get into strike-offs and things that can happen if you don't file your returns, I gave a brief intro there, but tell me a little bit more about yourselves and your company and the way you operate.
Yeah, sure. So Company Bureau, we're a leading company formation, company secretarial and corporate service provider. So our main business will be setting up companies and just helping them stay compliant. And, you know, a lot of our clients will be accountancy firms, tax advisors, solicitors, Irish and international entrepreneurs. So we're in business since 1997. We've set up about 40,000 companies since then, and actually had some good news this week. We're actually nominated for an award with the Small Firms Association.
Their
Small Business Awards under the services category. So we're excited about that.
Great stuff. So I suppose there's a little bit of, I'm not going to say an urgency, but deadlines loom at this time of the year, don't they? And a lot of those deadlines are around companies kind of getting their paperwork in order and filing their returns. So what do businesses need to do between now and the end of the year? What's important for them right now in terms of filing returns?
Yeah, well, look, the most important one from our perspective would be the annual return with the company's registration office. Now, we had a big deadline yesterday, so a lot of companies would have the calendar year as their financial year. So the 25th of November would have been a big deadline for a lot of these companies. But basically what you need to do, you need to file this return with the company's registration office. It's a snapshot of the directors, the registered office, the shareholders of the company. So new companies have to file this 6 months after incorporation, and then it's every 12 months thereafter. So every year, with the exception of the first return, you also have to file a set of accounts, and those accounts are publicly available at the company's registration office, but they give, you know, limited information on the financials of the company. So and look, that would be separate from accounting and tax obligations, such as, you know, the corporation tax return, VAT returns and so forth.
And it's, I suppose, a lot to think of at this time of the year, isn't it? Because, you know, coming up to Christmas and, you know, November tends to be a very busy time of the year for many reasons anyway, projects being completed, planning for the new year for 2026 in this instance. So I suppose it's a matter of setting time aside, isn't it? And kind of just doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, it's very important that it does happen. You know, like there isn't a big enforcement campaign at the moment. The company's registration office are in the process of striking off companies that haven't made annual returns. And, you know, we believe that there's about 35,000 companies that are at risk of involuntary strike off at the moment. So prior to COVID, there was probably about 5,000 companies a year that would be struck off for non-filing of returns. But the CRO have paused activities since then. So they're only really now, you know, in the process of striking off these companies again, because they had a few IT issues and so forth. So they're going full steam ahead now to take an enforcement action against these, what they call delinquent companies. So as I say, we believe there's about 35,000 companies at risk of being struck off within the next 12 months. So look, there is a lot for people to do this time of year, but you know, our advice would be for company directors to do a bit of a health check on the companies that they're directors of, just to make sure that the annual returns are up to date And if they aren't up to date, then we'd recommend that they take decisive action and take professional advice.
If there's someone listening right now, you know, this being the 26th of November, and they're just in a complete panic because they realise they've missed the deadline, how lenient, you know, are the powers that be in terms of extending that deadline?
They can be quite strict, okay, to be honest, but it has been made a little bit easier this year. So previously, if a company was even a day late with its annual return, that you would lose the audit exemption and you would incur penalty fees straight away.
Okay.
Now, a company won't lose the audit exemption if this is the first time it's been late in 5 years. You know, this is just a new piece of legislation that came out this year. But that said, you know, the penalties can be quite harsh. I mean, if a company filed its return late, you know, for the second time within a 5 year period, then it must have an audit for the following 2 years, you know. And for small businesses, that can be a fairly substantial cost.
Sure.
You know, it could definitely cost a few €1,000 for two audits.
So you mentioned there a rather stark figure, which is that you estimate around 35,000 businesses at present in the country are in danger of being struck off. So can you outline to our listeners what exactly it means to be struck off then?
Well, it's you know, for a company to be struck off, I mean, it causes a massive problem. I mean, the first thing I'd say, the assets of the company automatically become the property of the state, you know.
Okay.
And if the company continues to trade, it's doing so without limited liability. So the directors don't have that protection that they normally would have, you know. The other thing as well, the Corporate Enforcement Authority can actually take action against directors that allow their companies to be involuntarily struck off. So they can actually be disqualified as directors and managers of Irish companies. So the implications of it can be very severe, you know, and there is a reputational risk there for directors as well. We recently had a case, a well-known businessman, he had a company he set up as a joint venture between him and another party, and each of them thought the other person was closing down the company. So he approached us there a couple of months ago, and luckily we got his company back into good standing. But he was, you know, he was kind of worried about the reputational risk that would come with it. So so look, that would be an implication as well, and something that you know, company directors, and look, I know that there's plenty of company directors down in Waterford. It's mm-hmm. something that they need to be aware of, you know.
If you're struck off, can that be reversed? And how do you go about that?
It can be reversed, yeah. It can be, but for us, the key thing is not to allow it to happen in the first place. But if you do find yourself in a situation where your company is involuntarily struck off, you can reinstate it to the register. Now, you need to do it within a year. If it goes past a year, you actually have to apply to the High Court, which is a very costly exercise. But if it's within 12 months, it can be done. But you still have to file all those outstanding annual returns, and you won't be able to apply for the Section 343 District Court application. So if a company is late with its annual returns, we recommend that they consider the Section 343 District Court application, because that will allow them file those outstanding annual returns without the need for an audit and without penalty fees. So we're happy to do a free check to see if companies are eligible for that process. But obviously, if the company's struck off, you can't do that.
Okay. And I presume from everything you've outlined to me there that if you're generally fairly diligent and you're up and running a while, maybe you're a company that's in existence 8 years, say, and you're usually very diligent, and there's 1 year where you don't file on time, you're not going to get immediately struck off. I'm taking from what you've said that it's more if there's, I suppose, a pattern of not filing.
I suppose, look, pre-COVID, if your company annual return was outstanding by more than a year, you were at risk of strike-off.
Okay.
But like, there is companies there at the moment that haven't filed returns since 2019 that are still on the register. But all these companies are going to be struck off. So basically what's happening is you're having about 6 or 7 years worth of companies being struck off within
okay.
a year. So that's what's happening at the moment. But going forward, I'd expect the company's registration office to bring things back to the way they were pre-COVID. So if your annual return is outstanding more than a year, you are at risk of strike off. And obviously, if it's happened more than once, you're probably at a higher risk.
Okay, so don't take any chances with it. Don't rest on your laurels. Get your files returned, you know, within deadline is probably your best advice. Where can people find out more about your services and about Company Bureau, Andrew?
Sure. Well, they can have a look at our website. That's probably the best port of call. So our website is www.companyformations.ie. So all the services that we offer are outlined there. And look, if there is any company directors in Waterford that are listening and they're worried about this, by all means, give us a call. Our contact details are on the website. And as I say, we can do a quick check and see if they're eligible for the Section 343 District mm-hmm. Court application, which I would, you know, I'd highly recommend they consider that process before they go filing outstanding returns and accounts, just in case there's, you know, unless, you know, in case that they're doing an audit unnecessarily.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Andrew Lamb, Managing Director of Company Bureau, thanks very much for talking to me this evening.
Not all, Mary. Thanks for having me on.